Chapter 13. Wherever he went now, Matt watched for Indian signs. Sometimes he could not be sure whether a branch had broken in the wind or whether an animal had scratched a queer-shaped mark on a tree trunk. Once or twice, he was certain he had discovered the sign of the beaver. It was a game he played with himself. That it was not a game to a teen, he was still to learn. They were following a narrow trail one morning, this time to the east, when a teen halted abruptly. "Psst," he warned. Off in the brush, Matt heard a low, rasping breath and a frantic scratching in the leaves. The noise stopped the moment they stood still. Moving warily, the boys came upon a fox crouched low on the ground. It did not run, but lay snarling at them, and as he came nearer, Matt saw that its foreleg was caught fast. With a long stick, a teen pushed aside the leaves, and Matt caught the glint of metal. "White man's trap," said a teen. "How do you know?" Matt demanded. "Indians not use iron trap. Iron trap bad." "You mean a white man set this trap?" Matt thought of Ben. "No. Some white man pay for bad Indian to hunt for him. White man not know how to hide trap so good." A teen showed Matt how cleverly the trap had been hidden. The leaves and earth mounded up like an animal burrow with two half-eaten fish heads concealed inside. The fox watched them, its teeth bared. The angry eyes made Matt uncomfortable. "We're in luck to find it first," he said to cover his uneasiness. A teen shook his head. "Not beaver hunting ground," he said. "Turtle clan hunt here." He pointed to a nearby tree. On the bark, Matt could just make out a crude scar that had the shape somewhat like a turtle. He was indignant. "We found it," he said. "You mean you're just going to leave it here because of a mark on a tree?" "Beaver people not take animal on turtle land," a teen repeated. "We can't just let it suffer," Matt protested. "Suppose no one comes here for days. Then fox get away." "How can he get away?" "Bite off foot." Indeed, Matt could see now that the creature had already gnawed its own flesh down to the bone. "Leg men soon," a teen added, noting Matt's troubled face. "Fox have three leg beside." "I don't like it," Matt insisted. He wondered why he minded so much. He'd long ago got used to clubbing the small animals caught in his own snares. There was something about this fox that was different. Those defiant eyes showed no trace of fear. He was struck by the bravery that could inflict such pain on itself to gain freedom. Reluctantly, he followed a teen back to the trail, leaving the miserable animal behind. "It's a cruel way to trap an animal," he muttered. "Worse than our snares." "Eh," a teen agreed. "My grandfather not allow beaver people to buy iron trap. Some Indian hunt like white man now. One time many moose and beaver, plenty for all Indians and for white man too. But white man not hunt to eat, only for skin. Him pay Indian to get skin, so Indian use white man's trap." Matt could not find an answer. Tramping beside a teen, he was confused and angry as well. He couldn't understand the Indian code that left an animal to suffer just because of a mark on a tree. And he was fed up with a teen's scorn for white men. It was ridiculous to think that he and a teen could ever really be friends. Sometimes he wished he could never see a teen again. Even at that same moment, he realized that this really was not true. Even though a teen annoyed him, Matt was constantly goaded to keep trying to win the strange boy's respect. He would lie awake in the night, staring up at the chinks of starlight in the cabin roof, and make up stories in which he himself, not a teen, was the hero. Sometimes he imagined how a teen would be in some terrible danger, and he, Matt, would be brave and calm and come swiftly to the rescue. He would kill a bear unaided, or a panther, or fend off a rattlesnake about to strike. Or he would learn about an enemy band of Indians sneaking through the forest to attack the place where a teen was sleeping, and he would run through the woods and give the alarm in time. In the morning, he laughed at himself for this foolish daydreaming. There was little chance he would ever be a hero, and little chance, too, that a teen would ever need his help. Matt knew that the Indian boy came day after day only because his grandfather sent him. For some reason, the old man had taken pity on this helpless white boy, and at the same time, he had shrewdly grasped at the chance for his grandson to learn to read. If he suspected that a teen had become the teacher instead, he would doubtless put a stop to the visits altogether. Matt knew he ought to feel grateful for a teen's teaching. Every day, a teen taught him some new thing, a plant like an onion that he could drop into his cooking pot to make his stew more tasty, a weed with a small orange flower and a milky juice in its stem that took away the sting of insect bites or poison ivy, a plant with brownish flowers and roots bearing a string of nut-like bulbs that thickened his stew and made it more nourishing. He had pointed out plants that Matt must never eat, no matter how hungry he might be. He had even shown Matt how to improvise a rain cape in a sudden rain by quickly punching a hole through the center of a wide strip of birch bark and making a cone of bark for his head. The only thing that Matt could teach him, a teen, was set against learning. For a teen, the white man's signs on paper were piswat, good for nothing. Nevertheless, Matt noticed that in spite of himself, a teen had learned something from the white boy. He was speaking the English tongue with greater ease. Perhaps he was not aware himself how differently he spoke. He picked up new words readily. Sometimes he used them with that odd humor that Matt was beginning to recognize. Matt knew that a teen was mocking when some of his own favorite expressions came solemnly out of the Indian's mouth. "Reckon so," a teen would say. "Rain come soon, by golly." Sometimes he even took a fancy to a word out of Robinson Crusoe. He especially liked the sound of verily. In return, Matt liked to try out Indian words. They were not so too hard to understand, but impossible to get his tongue around. He didn't think he could ever quite get them right, but he could see that though it amused a teen when he tried, it also pleased him. "Chakwa," this morning, Matt might say, "I chased a quagg out of the corn patch." He wouldn't add that he had wasted an arrow and watched a porcupine waddle off unharmed. Perhaps after all, these lessons hadn't been entirely wasted.